Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope you and yours are doing fine. Wherever you are in the world isn't on fire or some shit like that. That would be good. And as ever, thank you very much indeed for being here. You will probably be able to gauge from my voice that I am not at 100% today. Physically, I'm like, and mentally, I'm a bit like. However, the prospect of not giving you guys a podcast on a Friday after I've been away for a week and not giving you a podcast last Friday, I couldn't do it. However, small talk will be in short supply in this intro and probably after the conversation I'm going to have with my guest, which I'm just going to get into because I'm finding it difficult to concentrate on, you know, things like words and the order in which they come out of my mouth and whether or not they make any sense when I say them. So let's do it. Let's get into the show. And I'm delighted to welcome back, as always, from CBS Sports, it's James Bench. Hello, James.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure. Preseason is well and truly underway. Have you been shelling out the big bucks to watch the games at midnight? I have to say I haven't.
No, just, wasn't the game in Orlando was sort of delayed by an hour or something as well? And I'm just like, God, I pity the poor fools. Once myself, that had to sort of stay up until the crack of, well, beyond the crack of dawn, probably, to watch this. I mean, it's, you know, having said that, you know, I think the in-person experience of preseason, you know, I love it. No one has to take anything too seriously. And it's always great fun, as we well know,
yeah,
on those US tours or wherever they go. But yeah, £6 is an awful lot of money for me to, you know, watch some of the Arsenal B team when I'm trying to get to sleep or whatever. It's not something that has even tempted me for a moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, when games are on at those sort of inhospitable times, we have to step back and remember our esteemed compatriots around the world, colleagues around the world, Arsenal fans around the world, for whom this is normal. You know, getting up at, as our friend Tim might say, 7 a.m. kickoff. You know, or you could be staying up until the middle of the night or getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning if you're down under, whatever it might be. So it gives you that little bit of perspective on the commitments that fans across the world make to watch Arsenal. You know, and fair play to them. They do it week in, week out for games that matter. But it's, you know, for grizzled old veterans like us, staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning. Morning.
I'd have sacked it off for the games that matter as well. Look at those kickoffs. It's horrible.
You can't say that. But look, it is a fun time for everyone out there. And from what I'm seeing online, talking to James on Tuesday for the Arscast Extra, I think the benefit of preseason, if we're looking at it beyond what it means for Mikel Arteta and his team, as we know, it's fitness exercise, bonding, getting everyone together, doing the hard work, all that kind of stuff. But for the club, these are valuable tours. And for the fans who may never get to come to London, may never get to go to a game, all those kinds of things. I mean, you can't lose sight of just how much it means to see the team in person, whether it is 45 minutes of a B team that you wouldn't put out in a Carling Cup game. That's neither here nor there. You do get a bit more in the second half or whatever it might be, but these experiences for the fans are actually really important, even if you want to like put preseason in its sort of category of like, this doesn't really matter too much. There are certain aspects of it that really do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly if we start on the for the club, you know, I don't know the specifics of how much Arsenal are taking home per game. But when you're talking a top level European team, it is, you know, in the millions per game. You know, this is a nice little earner, a good way of topping up, you know, the transfer kitty, topping up whichever kitty you need, especially, I think, after 2 years where you've kind of not really been able to maximize this period. I know it's kind of a bit grim to talk about things like that, but then we also talk about how important it is that Arsenal kind of, or any other club, spend 70 million or 60 million or whatever on a player that we want them to sign. You know, this is kind of, that's part of the deal. But yeah, the fan side of this, there's so many kind of memories of joining Arsenal on that quite lengthy tour of the US back in 2019. You know, I remember, without wishing to inflate your ego too much, I remember joining you for a sort of live podcast out in LA, and Yankee Gunner as well, Elliot, and people traveling across America, because obviously, you know, that's a lengthy journey, but nothing compared to coming to Europe, just to kind of be there around. You know, they'd say, we don't have a ticket for the game, we're going to come to the podcast, we're going to try and go to the kit launches and things like that, and just be around that community. There was a lovely thread going around, but I think it DTDC Gooner, just talking about how there was this sort of atmosphere and a sense that the fans stateside now don't feel like they have to apologise for not being, you know, the North London Gooners. They don't have to replicate the experience. You know, they are just themselves and enjoying the games in their way. And I mean, some of the videos and clips you're seeing, and you know, the excitement of fans young and old at seeing these players, even if they are B team players, even if it is Pablo Mari and Nuno Tavares. I mean, it's something we can all we can all learn not to, and you know, it was something we felt last season, wasn't it, when the game, the fans came back, that it's not something we want to take for granted anymore. And I hope that continues long into next season.
Yeah, I mean, the pressures of like wanting to achieve or needing to achieve as a football club, you know, they're there and they should be there, and they should be part and parcel of any top football club. You know, this ambition, this desire to win things, then win them again, win them again, win them again. And that sort of creates talking points and discourse and things which can get a little bit circular, if you know what I mean. And at times you kind of forget, like, football is fun. It should be fun. It's not always fun. Sometimes it's terrible and painful. It kicks you in the right where you don't want to be kicked at the worst possible time, you know, but that kind of is necessary. So when the fun things happen again, you really enjoy them, and sort of trying to remind yourself that in spite of all the stuff that happens around the world that we're not that fond of, you can escape at a football game. You can escape with your mates. You can escape with, you know, people you don't know, whatever it might be. And that sense of fun, I think, that surrounds aspects of preseason, it's not always there during the season, because obviously the stakes are higher. You know, it doesn't really matter if Arsenal beat Orlando. I was going to say Orlando Pirates, but it wasn't. It was Orlando City.
That's the one from South Africa?
It could well be. I think it is.
I'm going to convince myself it is.
Okay, no, all right. You know, but obviously you want Arsenal to win. Yes, Orlando Pirates. Yeah, they're in Johannesburg, so well done you. But Orlando City, of course, is a team that Arsenal beat in midweek. But trying to remember, you know, that you can just go and have fun and have a day out and enjoy all of it. You know, I like that aspect of things, because, you know, it'll get introspective pretty quickly.
It's also just 90 minutes and maybe even up to 2 hours, however long, where the discourse around a big football club isn't about showing ambition and making statements and all these things that everyone must do in the summer.
Yeah.
It's just about, like, having a bit of fun. And I think we also need to realize it's kind of about that for players as well. I know some of my colleagues spoke to a few of the first team out there, and they just said the atmosphere was really phenomenal. And it's a group of lads that are obviously kind of enjoying a little trip out to America. I know it's not how many of us would spend our time if we were flying out to America at our company's expense. But, you know, they're enjoying spending time with each other and building these bonds. And it's the same kind of across so many Premier League clubs, that that that's also what this time is for, not just, you know, obsessively drilling into transfers and all that stuff. I think it's at this stage of the preseason, I start to enjoy a bit more than the slog through the transfer market when we're waiting for the players to get back together, because I don't think you should take much from the games, but it's nice to have things to talk around that are more than just, you know, who's signing and who's being the most ambitious and who's won the transfer window trophy.
Well, yes. And now, you know, we'll wait to the end of August before we can find out who definitively has won the transfer window trophy, the most important trophy of them all, as we know. You said something there and I was going to follow up on it, but I'm in a bit of a brain fog at this moment in time, so I can't remember exactly what it was, and I'll just move on to the next thing. I mean, is there anything from, you know, look, I'm not staying up late to watch the games, but I'm watching a bit of highlights, watching a few clips here and there. Is there anything that sort of stood out from you from the preseason preparations yet?
Eddie Nketiah looks pretty, he looks like he's going to take some knocking off the ball. That was the, I mean, because that's something we can learn from preseason. Eddie Nketiah looks like he has kind of, you know, hit the gym hard. And I kind of really like that, because he's always going to be the fox in the box guy, isn't he? He's not, he's got better at his build-up work, but I think Nketiah's strengths are always going to be about, you know, he knows where the ball's going to bounce. And if he's just got kind of a bit of muscle, a bit of strength to overpower the defender as well as kind of outthink them, outburst them, that's something I really like. And interesting as well to see in that Orlando game, I think it wasn't the goal he scored, but there was a good shot where he showed some really nice quick feet in the penalty area. I'm sure he and Jesus, as much as they're in competition, will be working together. And I think one thing I'd like to see Nketiah pick up from Jesus is this ability to just twist and turn and find a shot. I think Eddie's quite instinctive.
Mm.
And maybe the next step for him in improving that penalty box side of his game is just, if the ball drops to you, can you take two or three touches, get it out of your feet and get a shot away? Jesus does that as well as anyone I've seen in the Premier League, I think. And I mean, something for him, for Nketiah to pick up, and it's good to see him doing well.
Yeah, there was a picture during the rounds towards the end of the season where, you know, he was standing there topless, shirt off, I think you would say. Topless has other connotations. But certainly he looks like a young man that has been spending some time in the gym. And if I remember from the brief highlights I saw of the Everton game, or was it, did they play another one? What one did they play before Everton?
So there was Nuremberg?
Could have been Nuremberg, yeah, with a couple of own goals. And a couple of the own goals were a consequence of Eddie's good work in the box. I think one was a shot which deflected off the bar, or whatever it was. And it is an interesting thing, because we talked about when Gabriel Jesus came in, like, here's a guy who has been at a multi-star team like Man City for years, and in some ways is coming to Arsenal with a weight of responsibility on him. And I love the quotes, I'm not here to be a superstar, not here to be the main man, etc., etc., except you are. You are, and that's what we all want from you, and that's what we all expect from you. But I like your humble attitude. At the same time, though, that responsibility can really drive a player. It can motivate them. It can inspire them in some ways. And I do wonder if perhaps having finally convinced Mikel Arteta that he is worthy of more playing time than he saw at times last season, the same might be true for Eddie. Like, this chance, he's basically the number two striker at the club right now, unless Arsenal go out and buy another centre forward, and I don't see that happening. So he is the number two behind Gabriel Jesus, but also could be a 1-2 with Gabriel Jesus. Plenty of football, plenty of cup games, all of those kinds of things. This is exactly the chance, if you like, that he was looking for, and as you talked about so well on the Beautiful Game podcast last year. You know, his entire thing was, if you give me the chance and I don't do it, fair enough. But if I never get the chance, you know, how am I supposed to feel about that? So here is his chance. I mean, it was in small part at the end of last season as well, when he got that run of games and did pretty well. But this is it again, isn't it? And with a measure of expectation now because of his place in the pecking order, the number, the salary, all those things that people use to sort of assess the expectation level they have around a player.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, of course it's third striker to second striker, but that is a maybe a bigger step up in reality than it sounds in practice. I'm sure he will start most of the Europa League games. But also, you know, how many of those games before he was given that run of starts was Nketiah the sort of smash glass in case of emergency, will bring you on quite possibly when, at least one of Aubameyang and Lacazette, but quite often both were on the pitch. You're going to have to go somewhere, you know, it is not like they are setting up a team. It's sort of like, Eddie, just do something, please. We're begging you. Whereas now it's about how he is integrated into the way his team play from the offset, whether that's kind of as a kind of first reserve striker in the Premier League, where you can expect him to get a lot of minutes. I think hopefully Arsenal will get into the habit of winning games more heavily so that he can come on, except when Gabriel Jesus is chasing his many, many hat tricks. Got to leave him on for them. But, you know, he will now be a part of how this team plays, not a desperation move. And I think what we saw late last season was he deserves more credit than many of us, myself included, gave him for the stuff he does outside the penalty area. You know, he really has obviously worked very hard, because I didn't see this early in his Arsenal career, on being a guy that can play with his back to goal, that Saka, Ødegaard can bounce it off. I don't think he'll ever be his strength, but he knows now that's what he's going to need to do. He knows he's going to have to be a link man. He's not just going to be the wing and a prayer, come on, try and nick us a goal, Eddie. That's not Eddie anymore. That's a challenge to him. And, you know, I think that's what he wanted, as you say, on that beautiful game interview. The real sense I got was he was basically saying to Arteta, look, challenge me, test me. If I fail, like, you know, I'll go somewhere else and try and do it there. But he's been given that. And you know, we've seen that most Arsenal Academy lads, when you ask them to step up, they tend to deliver. They're a smart bunch of kids. And I think he'll do well.
Well, I hope so as well, because, look, we've had players who've come through, but it's been a while since there's been, like, a true academy striker who's come in and made themselves a real regular in the team. And, look, he's still got some way to go, plenty to prove. You know, I think he would be the first to admit that he's got lots to prove. Still, he's 22, is he just gone 23? I can't remember, or he's just gone 22, one or the other. But, you know, still a very young age for a player to come through from the academy. And there's something, I think, quite romantic about that idea. I mean, I love Bukayo Saka. I love Emile Smith Rowe. I love the guys who've come through, who've maybe come from abroad and come through our academy. You think of the likes of Hector Bellerin, Cesc Fabregas, players like that who, you know, we think of as academy graduates, even if they came at an early age and perhaps we stole them from elsewhere. But, you know, the idea of a center forward, a number nine, well, he's not necessarily the number nine, obviously, but that gives it an extra dimension, I think, you know, where, like you, I didn't really see it happening for him. I didn't think he was going to get the chance. I didn't know if necessarily he deserved the chance, but now I'm sort of much more invested than I thought I would be in Eddie. So, you know, that homegrown center forward thing, we've had some names, there have been plenty of them down the years, you know, who almost made it, who nearly made it, who were talked of as potential breakthrough strikers, but never quite got there. I mean, he looks like he's got a chance.
Yeah, and that's all you want. I mean, hearing all that, it kind of brought me back to, I don't know if you've seen the documentary that the club have done, the other documentary that the club have done in their work on Hale End, Inside Hale End, it's called.
Not yet.
If people want to watch it, it's on the website. But just kind of seeing those early episodes, and, you know, we were at an event with Per Mertesacker and Jack Wilshere. I think what you kind of realise is, for someone like a Jack, who I know played in a very different position to striker, but that, you know, if this all works, if this even works to the level that Jack Wilshere did, where it was a few wonderful years and obviously not the whole career we all wanted for Wilshere at Arsenal, that it just ends up being something really special for the fan base, for the player as well. Like, you know, they will be thinking, you know, this is Eddie's club in the same way it is Jack's club and Bukayo's club. And, you know, he's, for Arsenal fans, he's their striker in a way that, you know, no matter how great Gabriel Jesus is going to be. Let's just talk it into existence. It's different to the one that's been there more than half. Well, I mean, obviously, I know he was at Chelsea first, but he's been there for half his life or however long it may be. You know, those bonds, it's irreplaceable. And, you know, you look at the folklore of Arsenal, it is based around Tony Adams, Rocky, Bukayo Saka, frankly, already. At that level of hero worship, you only get if you are from, or you pretty much only get if you're from the academy, or, you know, you're Thierry Henry and you're one of the greatest players the English football's ever seen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know where you're coming from. I mean, everyone loves the idea of the homegrown player, and look, we've got plenty of those coming through at the moment as well. So let's hope he can do that. I want to move on and talk a little bit about Alexander Zinchenko. Interesting signing. Mikel Arteta was asked about where he might play, because there's a lot of talk about where is his best position or where does he want to play, and he's played a lot at left back for Manchester City. Mikel Arteta said he was a natural number 10 early in his career. Can't have enough number 10s, if you ask me. We're getting back.
Arsenal's back.
Back to business here, baby. And he said we converted him to a left back where he can do a lot of things that we want in our way of playing. And he said that versatility is something that's going to be important for the team, because we have players in that position who are more specific fullbacks. So I'm really happy. Before I ask you more about the versatility side of things, just some quick thoughts on Zinchenko and a 25-year-old experienced international player, won pretty much everything at Manchester City. You know, this is another quality addition to a team which needed players who, when you look at, you know what I like about a transfer is like where you sign a player and you go, ooh, what does that mean for that guy? That guy who always starts. And I feel like that's a positive thing, because it creates the kind of competitive environment that you need, rather than like you sign a guy, well, he's obviously the backup to the good guy. I like the idea that players are coming in and we're going, you know what? He's got a bit of a fight in his hands, or, you know, he's not going to have it easy to play week in, week out. He's got to keep his form up. And he feels like one of those signings.
Yes, I love this. I think this is a fantastic signing, especially at that price point. I know that obviously, you know, the Lisandro Martinez deal got a little bit away from Arsenal, and that's quite understandable when you see that United may well end up paying the best part of €60 million for a player Arsenal initially bid 30 for. But this guy ticks so many boxes. I think one of the things that really stood out over the last few months, you know, possibly the most high profile Ukrainian footballer out there, captain of his national team at a time that was incredibly trying. And, you know, you see what people at Manchester City were saying about Zinchenko during that time and how incredibly admirable he was, and these character traits beyond just being the captain of his country, being a person that's willing to use his platform to keep talking about, you know, the horrible things that are happening in his home country. I think that at the very least, you know, it's strange to then start trying to apply that to what that means to someone as a footballer. But it means, you know, you're getting an excellent individual, a role model, someone who, you know, you can rely on to give 100%. Saw quite a bit of him at City at the back end of last season. Whenever you did, he was 7, 8 out of 10. But like you say, I think that the joy of this signing from an Arsenal perspective is Kieran Tierney knows he's got competition. He knows that, you know, I think it may well be that he's the starting left back. And I think, you know, I look at this and my assumption is that this is more of a pressure on Granit Xhaka and that left eight move. But both of them are going to feel it. And if Granit Xhaka starts playing really well, naturally what Mikel Arteta will do is go, well, gosh, Zinchenko's playing great, Xhaka's playing great. And if Kieran Tierney isn't, it becomes, you know, sorry, Kieran, you're going to have to drop out. We've got to make room for these players that are playing well, and vice versa if Xhaka struggles. Yeah. Like you say, this is... It's versatility, but it's starter quality versatility. I think he's going to go into this team and be one of the better players in that starting 11. The games he's had at an international stage, not least the, you know, fantastic performance for Ukraine against Scotland. This is such a high bar he's setting as an eight. That's where I would like to see him play most of his minutes. I think that's just an area that Arsenal could take a step up. But, you know, if and when Tierney goes down, he's not the best defensively as a left back, but he is he's very capable of doing the sort of things that Arteta likes his fullbacks to do: tuck in, be an outlet for possession.
Mm.
I don't see much of a downside to it at all.
No, I'm with you. I think it's a very shrewd investment, a very shrewd signing, and he is versatile, as we say. He can play left eight, he can play left back. I'm sure he can play probably as a wing back. You know, when you play fullback in a Guardiola team, there are very specific demands on you, you know, as to where you have to be, where you've got to stand, all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure the same will be true of Mikel Arteta. But it's true of, and I made this point to James on Tuesday on the Arsecast Extra, like there's a running theme through many of the signings that we're making is players who can play in more than one position. Clearly, Arsenal have needed to add depth to the squad, and one way you can do that is just buy loads of players, which is fine, but Arsenal have too many players as it is right now and need to get rid of some of them. But you can also do it by having players who can play in multiple positions. And he was asked about versatility. He said, it's one of the things and the way we can adapt structures, formations, and rotations within the squad and playing with the same players in a different way. To be more unpredictable is obviously important. And that is why we've recruited these players. So adding, I don't know whether it's a marginal gain. Does it make half a percentage difference, one thing or the other? You know, because teams can adjust, managers can adjust, coaches can adjust from the sideline. If you've done something that they don't necessarily expect you to do, you know, you can shift your formation mid-game, and we've seen that happen plenty of times. So I don't know that it's a thing that you're going to go out and play a game and the opposition are going to be, whoa, where did that come from? But, you know, Arsenal were predictable last season. You knew who was going to play. You knew who was going to play where. And that was because we just did not have enough players. And I just think about this, and I also think about it in light of the five subs rule as well, whereby basically you can change half your outfield team during the course of a game. And having players who can slot into different positions and shift your formation, adapt the way that you're playing based on the game, the way it's going, in-game strategy, all that kind of stuff, is going to be more and more important than ever, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think one of the other ways of, the more sort of downbeat way of thinking about this, is just about Arsenal not being in some of the situations they were quite frequently at the back end of last season, where they just had players that weren't that good by Arsenal standards. And that we obviously always think of that as like, well, this guy doesn't bring enough. But it's not just about that. It's about how kind of compensating for a Cedric. I don't think I'm, you know, I don't think that's going to be too unpopular a suggestion there. Just inhibits other players. I seem to remember that Ben White was kind of not the same roving step into midfield centre back when Cedric was next to him, because if he steps into midfield and loses the ball, that right side of the defence is just vacant, pretty much.
Mm.
You know, if you've got Tomiyasu or you've got Saliba tucked in, you know, and he's in a position to step inside because Ben White is playing at right back or however it works out.
Yeah.
And the same on that opposite flank. If you're just not having to compensate, you can do more things. You can be a more proactive, assertive version of yourself. I've got no doubt that kind of Gabriel, off the top of my head, was not charging forward to do his strong thundering tackles in midfield in quite the same way when it was Nuno Tavares behind him. And that's what you say about whether it's changing up the team so that you're bringing in, you know, you're bringing off the bench Fabio Vieira, or maybe this, if Arsenal get him, a new winger, rather than bringing in sort of Nicolas Pepe, and everything kind of has to adapt to Pepe's limitations.
Yeah.
You know, the players just adapt to each other's qualities. That, to me, seems a really good position. And I think kind of when you think who might be coming off the bench for Arsenal, I think a near fully strength Arsenal squad is going to be able to make five good changes every single game. And that's a great position for Arteta to be in, and not one he was in a lot last season, I have to say.
Yeah, true, true. Because you sometimes looked at the bench and went, well, yeah, not much is going to change there, and the ability or inability to come from behind and turn over a deficit in a game to end up either taking a point or a win is a key issue. It is an area for improvement for this season ahead. But I wonder as well, do we think about this from the perspective of players? Do you think players find like, they all say, James did his interview with Fabio Vieira, he's like, oh, I like to be a 10. And, you know, we've got another 10 with Zinchenko. We've got all the 10s, and everyone wants to be a 10. But you can't all play 10, and we don't even really play with a 10 anyway. You've just got to, like, fit in. But do you think there's something that players themselves might think, well, this is quite good? Like, you know, if you're on the bench as a central defender, you're like, well, there's two reasons why I'm coming on. You know, we have to make a change because players got injured or someone's got sent off, or it's Rob Holding to, you know, man up the lead that we're desperately trying to hang on to. I mean, those are the only ways you get on the pitch as a defender, right? You either get all hands on deck, or someone's got injured and you have to replace them, or someone's got sent off, you got to have a reshuffle. But if you're a Fabio Vieira, if you're a Zinchenko, if you're a Smith Rowe, if you're a Martinelli and you haven't started the game and you're thinking, you know, I could come on in left eight, I could come on the right, I could come on the left, I could play in behind the striker. You know, all those kind of things increase the opportunities for players to make contributions as well. So I wonder about, you know, keeping them invested and for them to sort of rise to this challenge of versatility, if you want to call it that, by adding as many strings to their bow as they can.
It's a really interesting point. And I think one thing I'm sort of intrigued by with this five subs rule is, do you end up having some players that just sort of gravitate into more of a finisher, you know, a finisher role? They come off they you know, in the, obviously these aren't rolling substitutions, but, you know, in sports like the NBA, you would have quite a degree of competition for the sixth man of the year prize. And obviously everyone will say they want to be a starter, and that's natural. And I'm sure Fabio Vieira, you know, would much rather be in Arsenal starting 11 than being the 12th or 13th man off the bench. But I think it's an opportunity to really, like, you know, embrace that. I think it's something that Nketiah could be really good at. You think of someone like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and those great Manchester United teams of the turn of the century. He made that role his own, and it was, you know, you could tell that here was a player with some tactical acumen who, helped by one of the great managers, knew when he came onto the pitch, he kind of had been observing the game and knew how to positively impact it. I think that's maybe something like I don't know, I'm kind of guessing a bit here, but someone like a Fabio Vieira, or if it's Ødegaard or Smith Rowe, you've got players that will really understand where the gaps are, where the pockets are, and can maybe exploit them in a way that, like you say, with three subs, especially for a team like Arsenal, at least one of them was always given over to, well, Christ, we've got to adapt to this red card we've just got, and then another one. And then suddenly there's not many opportunities for the players and the managers to really sort of bend the game around from the bench. That will be intriguing. I think Arsenal have the sort of players who can do that. I guess the reality of having had so many red cards and that being kind of a big theme of Arteta's tenure is, I don't know how well Arteta will be able to do that, but, you know, give the guy some good quality options and it should be a lot easier.
Yeah, I do wonder. There was something that I did think about, you know, we've just been talking about versatility, but I wonder about the specialization of substitutes. If that might become a tactical thing in the next couple of years as these five subs become, everyone gets used to them, commonplace. Like, you know, it used to be 3 from 9, it's going to be 5 from 9, 3 from 7, then it was 3 from 9, now it's going to be 5 from 9. So I wonder if in certain game situations, whether it impacts game plans, whether it impacts recruitment strategies, like, is there going to be a sort of run on 6'8" guys who aren't really that great, but, you know,
crouching.
Yeah, you sort of lump it to the big man kind of guy. I mean, it's industrial, but there is a reason why it is a theme in football, you know, because you can put pressure on the opposition that way. Do you then, you know, counter that with 6'10" central defenders? I don't know how this is going to work. I mean, the game might just become more and more technical, but I also wonder if certain trends will emerge because of this five subs rule that we haven't really considered.
I think there's quite an interesting case there with Arsenal. I don't know about you, but I struggled to see when they were trying to sign Rafinha. I looked at him and thought, and I don't think he's an amazing footballer, to be frank, although he played very well for Leeds. I thought he's not going to be the starter in the big games, but by God, he'd be good to come off the bench, because, like you say, he was just going to be lightning quick. The fullbacks have just spent an hour or 55 minutes or however long being tested by Saka and Erdegaard. And they just go, oh, thank God, Saka's coming off the pitch. Martinelli's coming off the pitch. Who's this other? Oh, fuck, it's Rafinha.
Yeah.
Like one of the paciest wingers in the Premier League. That, like you say, that's incredibly interesting. Yeah, bring Crouchy out of retirement as well. My thing with England, I'm not sure I'm even over it yet. Every time a World Cup or a Euros came around, I was like, I know he's not that great at anything else, and I know he's always injured, but at some stage throughout the tournament, you're going to want Andy Carroll to be able to come off the bench and just stick it long to him for 5 minutes. It's England. Let's see what happens. Yeah. He's free agent, isn't he? You can't give him a ring.
That is why England haven't won the World Cup in all these years. Finally, someone has got to the core of the issue here, James. Thanks very much. You know, I know what you mean. Big guys have always had an impact. You know, you can think of goals that we've conceded down the years.
For no guy.
Yeah. John Carew against us. You know, you think about, yeah, I know, too soon. I know. Just before we move on, there is a little bit of captaincy talk, and Mikel Arteta spoke about it during the week, sort of hinting that it is going to be Martin Odegaard. I have a feeling it will be too. Any thoughts on that? How do you view the captaincy, particularly in a team that's quite young now? Because, you know, there are some senior players in there, but if you're growing a side together, if you're going to try and develop a team that stays together, fingers crossed, successfully for quite a number of years, you're probably better giving the captaincy to one of those guys rather than one of the senior figures. And I'm not sure there is an outstanding candidate, you know, among those three or four senior players, if you like, that we have.
Yeah, I think Erdegaard is absolutely fine. I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about the captaincy. I know a lot of people now do think of it as, you know, just a sort of fabric cloth that people wear around that it doesn't matter very much. Having said that, you know, I think when you kind of look at Arsenal post Vieira, you know, there's been quite a lot of turbulence in the dressing room, a lot of unhappiness, and the captaincy has largely, you know, with the odd exception, it's largely been treated as a fop to senior players to stop them from leaving. You know, I think you could, as much as it was kind of thrust on him at the time, you could maybe even add Aubameyang to that list, but certainly Henry, Robin van Persie, players like that. And actually, and I'm stealing this from an excellent book by Sam Walker called The Captain Class. If you look at kind of the period when Arsenal were relatively successful and relatively cohesive, it was the era of Arteta as club captain, Per Mertesacker as club captain, and I think a little bit Lauren Koscielny, but especially those two. Settled dressing room, leaders who kind of led in the right way, and you knew were kind of at Arsenal for the rest of their career. That would be my challenge to Erdegaard. If you want to be Arsenal captain, I mean, you don't have to stay forever, but let's not have kind of Arsenal's captain in 2 years being, you know, being targeted by Real Madrid or PSG or whoever, and it becoming a saga. Because I kind of think when you look back on it, of course it would have impacted the dressing room that club captains year in, year out looked like they were off.
Yeah.
I know that was a bit the case with Vieira, but especially Henry and Van Persie, they were going to go. They were given the armband, and then it was like, yeah, they'll stay for one more year.
You know, so but I think one thing we have to acknowledge, like if in 2 years' time Real Madrid or PSG or wherever it is want Martin Odegaard, it's because Martin Odegaard is playing at a level that clubs like that want. And I think that's something that we've been missing as well. Yeah. Like interest in our best players, like it puts you on edge, but at the same time, it reminds you that the players you've got are good. You know, everyone is sort of, until Bukayo Saka signs a new contract, if you say the words Saka and Man City in close contact, everyone's going to go, ugh. You know, but that's because he's good. That's because he's a really good player. And the consequence of having players like that in your squad is that other teams, richer teams, perhaps more successful teams, are going to want them and are going to try and take them. So I think that's something that we've got to take into account when we have those discussions. But I do know what you mean. And I think there is something about, again, going back to responsibility, we talked about with Gabriel Jesus, with Eddie Nketiah, that sometimes a player is just at the right moment to give them that extra bit of responsibility. I think we saw more from Martin Odegaard last season than we did in a six-month loan spell. I'm looking for more again from him. I think he's capable of more in terms of goals and capable of more in terms of assists. But maybe having that responsibility, the honor, if you like, of the captain's armband can help. And I know there are many people who listen to this who will like long for the halcyon days of Tony Adams and the kind of inspirational captain that you can hang your hat on week in, week out, and that kind of character, that kind of leader. But, you know, they're not there, really. Those kinds of figures are very, very rare. So I think if you're always, you know, comparing, well, you're giving him the captaincy, but he's no Tony Adams, you're always going to be disappointed. But I think you can see with Odegaard, he's an intelligent guy, committed, works hard, has got the tactical eyes on the pitch of the manager, as we saw last season a number of times. And I think that responsibility, that level of trust between manager and player will be an important aspect of this decision.
Well, I mean, he's a model pro, isn't he? Like you say, for all the reasons you've listed. And I guess in a way, you know, take it back to the era of Tony Adams. Tony Adams was the model professional of his era, in that, you know, we can talk about, you know, all the things he did off field.
Mm.
He'd overcame, you know, the great cultural problems of English football to become a real genuine leader, and obviously was forged in Arsenal as well. And I think those were things that mattered to the dressing rooms of the 90s and the early noughties. Nowadays, what matters to them? Probably doesn't help. It probably wouldn't help Martin Odegaard's captaincy case if he'd overcome a drinking problem. Like, that's not something that matters to professional footballers in 2022. Odegaard chose all the right things. You know, he's always one of the first ones in at training. He works hard. He applies himself, and he, you know, carries out the manager's instructions. He doesn't make a fuss. You know, going back to all that transfer talk, he's not someone that's being linked day in, day out with a transfer and things like that. He gets on with things, keeps his head down, does a good job. Yeah, that's probably. I still want it to be Aaron Ramsdale, though.
Just for the chaos factor of all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Arteta says of Odegaard and his qualities we want as a captain, one of them is that he thinks about the team before himself. And that feels very lined up with what we know about what Mikel Arteta wants from his players as well.
And quite like he was as a captain.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, just one other thing that I want to talk about. Actually, there was another thing, but I'm not really going to talk about it now. And maybe it's a discussion for another day. It's about KSE and investment and the money they've spent. And I think I'll park that for another day. And we'll move on to something a little less serious. And that is the All or Nothing documentary is imminently being released. Something that when it was announced, I was like, oh no, just don't, know, don't do that, whatever. I mean, the money can't be good enough to do that. And then I found out they were being paid like £10 million for it, and I still thought, nah, the money's not good enough to do that. What's going on here? But as time has gone on, and as we've seen various bits and pieces, I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to watching this. The trailer was out this week, and there are a few little bits and pieces in there that we know we're going to see. What did you make of the trailer, first of all?
Oh, I'm really, really excited about this. This is, you know, That trailer for me, this was like Avengers level of excitement, where I was like, yes, we're getting all the hits. We are getting Mikel Arteta lose. It seems like he's going to be losing his rag about six times an episode. I don't know if someone told him before the start of the season, they just sort of pointed him in the direction of all those Jose Mourinho memes and were like, Mikel, be very careful. But
yeah,
like, the meme potential of this show is going to be off the charts. I think that's always the worry, isn't it? It's probably what you were kind of vocalizing there.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of fear that rival supporters are going to absolutely rip you on social media. But luckily, the season was a clear step in the right direction. And I think it'll be really interesting to see kind of how what we all felt around the club, that the players were growing up, that this was a strong dressing room and that it was shared by supporters. Mm. And that was one thing that really stood out in the trailer is clearly it's going to make an awful lot of hay on the bond that developed between Arsenal and its supporters. I think that's really interesting. But also, I'm just here for the drama. And it's got potential for sort of RuPaul's Drag Race in the makeup lounge before games drama with Aubameyang, with this Lacazette Cedric fight. I hope they don't leave that till episode 8.
We'll
have a whole episode of that.
Well, I'll have to defer to your RuPaul knowledge on this, but yeah, in terms of the drama, I mean, there's clearly things, you know. You can imagine the first episode, like, you know, the sort of opening day and then the Chelsea game, going through three games without being beaten, and then, you know, the mood being really low and all that kind of stuff. What I think I'm most interested in is the reactions that we see that are actually real and organic, because I think the way certain stories and certain things are going to be told to us, it's going to be told to us in a very particular way, right? So we're not blind to the fact that this is, in inverted commas, reality TV. It's not that what they haven't captured is real, it is, but how it's presented to you and the narrative through which the stories are told will be quite interesting to see. For example, the Aubameyang stuff, right? How much we see of that, how much we're allowed under the hood, if you like, I'm not 100% sure, but I do think that when, you know, a game goes wrong or when something's not quite right and there's a discussion in the dressing room at halftime, they don't have time to think about the fact that there are cameras on the roof and cameras in, you know, those kinds of things I think I'm most interested in. And like you say, training ground stuff that isn't supposed to happen. Training Cedric and Lacazette, whatever they do, whatever they get into, whoever else might be fighting. I mean, I always enjoyed a bit of a training ground fight between other people when I was playing football. It was always like, look at these two fucking idiots. You stand back and let them get on with it, you know. And that happens, of course, because it's a highly charged competitive environment. Even if you're playing on a, you know, a lowly level, when you're playing at Premier League level, these things are going to happen. So those kind of unfettered access to real moments is what I think I'm really interested in.
Yes, and I think as it moves on, the series, I'm certain we will get away from things that are more sculpted, because I don't doubt for a second that in those early games, you know, the dressing room and Mikel Arteta are thinking, God, we've lost three games and the Amazon cameras are everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, that and I think what's interesting, certainly I remember this very well from the Spurs series, and I think the slightly dull Man City one had the same thing. I mean, Man City was inevitably going to be dull because what drama is there in winning every single game? But that you don't see a lot of what happens early in the season because everyone's super conscious of the cameras and they're not letting themselves down. But equally, like, kind of, this is what we need to see. This sets the scene for the grand story that will be this Arsenal season, which is kind of, it seems like from the trailer and, you know,
yeah.
Kind of got to maybe speak to some guys around it. I get the sense it will be about this club reuniting after so many years of discord and anger. You're going to need to see an awful lot of maybe what was the low point, the nadir, we can debate that, of Arteta's reign. And like you say, it's only going to get better as it gets more unscripted. But also, be great to see some of these players. It was interesting noting someone like Rob Holding, who I know spoke really well with James as well out on tour, but maybe someone we don't kind of think about much of what he does beyond those 10 minutes where he comes and heads every ball to safety. You know, these guys are human beings that who understandably very rarely show much of what happens off the pitch to them, to the rest of the world. And I think it's particularly because it's a great bunch of lads at Arsenal, I'd kind of like to get to know them better in a way that teams of the past not quite as bothered.
Yeah, or you wouldn't have had that opportunity. And I think part of what will make this quite interesting is the complete, well, not complete shift, but like the huge frustration from those first three games to the point where, you know, which I think really began around the North London Derby and the Leicester away game, where you start going, hey, you know what? There could be something going on here. And as the season goes on, look, it didn't end the way we wanted it to end, obviously, but I don't think you can come away from last season and not have some of these guys closer to your heart than at the start of it. I did like the guy in the trailer who's going, this is the worst Arsenal team I've ever seen. And then like 30 seconds later is going, oh, we're falling in love with this team again, you know, and that sort of tells part of the story, you know?
So a fun little thing on that I heard, especially early, well, I think it's happened kind of throughout the season. As you will no doubt imagine, Amazon would have had, you know, doing their Vox Pops with fans after the games. Mm. And we are all aware of a certain divisive other channel that does those Vox Pops after the games. And I have no doubt that I'm pretty certain that Amazon people were saying, no, 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 we're not that lot. We're not them. We're the other ones. We're the other ones that are driving you mad this season.
Oh, look, it is going to be fun, I think. I think when's the first one is out in August, isn't it? So we don't have too long to wait. Eve of the season, I think, is the first.
Just before, yeah. So, you know, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? An embarrassing first couple of episodes where it's all about how bad Arsenal are and then they lose at Selhurst Park on the opening day.
Listen, is there any more upbeat note to leave a discussion on? I'm not sure. Look, I'm confident. I'm trying to remain upbeat, optimistic and ready for the new season. But we've a way to go yet. James, as ever, thank you very much. We'll leave it there and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Thank you very much indeed to James. You can find him on Twitter. He is at James Benj, at James Benj. Or is he at James _ Benj? No, I'm pretty sure it's James Benj, but I will just, you know, double check here for the sake of accuracy. He is at James Benj. No underscores whatsoever, before, in the middle, or after. So thank you very much indeed to him. As always, thank you very much to you guys for being here. How am I feeling? A bit like this. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows? Join us on Patreon tomorrow. We are going to have an Alexander Zinchenko profile podcast. Myself and Phil Costa will do that for you Friday on Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. And you can also sign up for our Fantasy Football League in there. Big prizes. I'll tell you more about those on Monday. Oh, no, on Tuesday, perhaps. Whenever it is, we're going to do the Arsecast Extra because James is traveling back from the US. So I suspect it'll probably be Tuesday of next week. I'll give you more details of that. Right. I am going to leave it there for this particular episode, because that is about as much as I've got in the tank. Thank you for being here as always, for downloading, for sharing, subscribing, and all the rest. Hope you enjoy the show, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, folks, cheers. Bye-bye.
join us as we take another enchanting adventure into the world of the angriest man on Twitter.
Why are all these people going on about Adawetus Tour? I remember when I was a kid, we had 2 days that were equally as hot, if not quite as hot, but probably not quite as hot. All this nonsense about how people are going to die because of hot weather and climate change and all that. Give me a break. Is that a local council? Can you hear me? It's just that my entire house is underwater and also on fire, and the sea level appears to be rising very, very fast. I think I might be about to drown. And there's an actual sharknado in the distance. Hello? Is anyone there?
Next week, another madcap laugh-a-minute romp with the angriest man on Twitter.
Everything is shit!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.